How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Figure Four Daily. It is the 7th of February, 2013, here at figure4online.com/WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined today by Big T, Todd Martin, who is a long way away. It's kind of funny. I literally just woke up, and I think it's 1 o'clock where you're at. Is that correct?
That's correct.
I'm normally 3 hours earlier than the world, and now I'm like 5 hours earlier. So I wake up and everybody's day is like, their day is going. And then like at noon, because it's 5 o'clock on the East Coast, like around noon here, everything just shuts down. Like the emails stop coming in and it's really weird. It's actually great. I love it. But it's weird. So what are you doing?
For those people, nothing of note. For those people doubting that Brian is on his honeymoon and figuring that he might have made up the story, so that he could get people off his back for never taking his honeymoon. I can confirm he's calling from a Hawaii area code. So
that's right. That's right. Let me say something real quick before we get to the news, just about this honeymoon. We are having, like, the greatest time. And people are, like, some people seem, like, completely baffled that I'm doing work here on this honeymoon, not realizing that, like, we're here for 2 weeks. And, for example, I'm doing this show right now, and Whitney is down doing morning yoga, which I wasn't even going to do anyway, although I probably could do some morning yoga. But the point is, she's over there doing morning yoga, I'm doing a show, and then the rest of the day we got like a billion things planned. So we've done like a shocking amount of fun stuff, and I've managed to squeeze in shows in the meantime. So anyway, so I throw that out there that I am not, in fact, ruining our honeymoon by doing these shows. So.
And doing shows aren't the most objectionable expenditure of time either. I look forward to doing the shows, for example. So.
Yeah, shows are fun. Shows are fun. It's not like I'm, I don't know. I'm trying to think of some horrible, dirty job, but let's just move on. What did you think of the Bruno show yesterday? Did you have a chance to listen to it yet?
No, I haven't. So unfortunately, I have no opinion on that. But I am very happy that Bruno is finally joining the Hall of Fame. Like, I mean, we've talked about this before, but it's something that I've been hoping that he would do for years and years, just because I feel like it'll just be cool for him to sort of see and get appreciation from modern wrestling fans and, you know, sort of a younger base that just shows that they sort of appreciate and know who he is. And that may not mean as much to Bruno as it does with some people, but I think that that's something that's important. Like when I was growing up, my favorite sport was baseball. And one of the things I really liked about baseball was that there was such a connection to the past. You know, like Stan Musial or Willie McCovey or Willie Mays. I mean, those guys were like big icons to me, even though, you know, they'd stopped, you know, they'd all retired decades before I'd even been born. You know, so, I mean, I think there's something to be said for connecting to the past and showing appreciation for the past and sort of the icons of, you know, and really anything, you know, whether it's, you know, music or sports or any form of entertainment. So I'm just very happy that he's finally going in. I'm looking forward to it a lot. And, you know, props to Triple H. I feel like the things that Triple H has been involved with since he started taking on more responsibility, I feel like in general have been successes. So it gives me optimism for what things are going to be like once he gains more power within the company. So there's that too.
I wonder if this is just something that popped into my mind when you're talking about this. I haven't really thought about it too much, but obviously if you listen to the Bruno interview or you read the interview on WWE.com with Triple H and Bruno, where Hunter is essentially... Did you read that interview, by the way?
No, that sounds good, too. I'll have to check that out, too, later.
It's astonishing because you kind of almost gave Triple H's speech that he gave. I don't want to say word for word, but Triple H is very big on history, the history of pro wrestling. And obviously, Vince McMahon was not a proponent of history. I mean, obviously, if you look at certain things, I mean, he would, for example, when they brought in the Big Show, when he was the Giant, you know, he looked back in history and he said, you know, we need to book this guy like Andre the Giant, which of course they didn't do. But the point is, sometimes he can look back at things that happened in the past and come up with ideas. But the one thing about Vince is like, he is a man who is all about what's coming next. He is a man who's all about the future. the past exists. If he likes a guy, you know, maybe he'll acknowledge him. And sometimes they bring people back and they half-ass the Hall of Fame for many years. But Vince has always been about, what's next? How do I make money? What's the future? Where do I go from here? And I think that part of that's part of the reason he has been so successful. He's not a guy that looks back. He's not a guy that looks backwards. He's a guy that's always moving forward. He's always moving into the future. He's always moving to the next big star, the next big storyline, the next big event. He's always moving forward. And I don't know. I don't know if that has anything to do with anything in terms of like the future of the business when Vince is gone and Hunter takes over. I don't know. I just think it's very interesting that history has never been anything that meant jack shit to Vince McMahon. Yet the way that Vince McMahon lived his life and promoted, he was the most successful promoter ever. So I just think, I wonder if there's anything to any of this.
Yeah, I think part of it, too, is an issue of control. Vince has always been very control-oriented, and Vince doesn't really like things that are outside of his control. So there's always very much an instinct on his part to sort of own things, from the way that he, you know, controls names and renames people, to the way that he wants people that were sort of big stars of the past. The old Bret Hart line about, you know, horses being, you know, taken out and shot after he's done with them. You know, there's sort of a mentality that once you sort of, played your role in getting Vince, you know, his success, but he wants to sort of push them to the side because he wants to have the control over what things are. And I think it's sort of, I think it's been a negative in a lot of ways for WWE over the years, in that I think it's one of the reasons it's sort of, it's viewed by a lot of people in sort of a tacky light, and that they sort of, they think that they can control everything. And sometimes you just got to sort of say, hey, you know, this person is an icon, and they're living their own life, and they have their own existence, and they have their own way of thinking things, and that's fine. You know, the NFL may not endorse everything that Jim Brown stands for, but Jim Brown was an icon of football. You know, an entertainment industry may not, you know, appreciate some of the things that various musicians have done over the years, but they'll still acknowledge them as being, you know, a giant and a lion within that industry. And I feel like doing that within wrestling is a positive move. It's one that I think both makes WWE look better, and I think it just in general makes the industry itself look better when it shows appreciation for its past and appreciation for the things that built it beforehand.
What did you think of Raw on Monday?
Not a terribly noteworthy show. I did very much like to see Mark Henry back. When I saw him back, I was like, man, I missed Mark Henry. Because, you know, he just has a seriousness about him, and he's just sort of a big, ass-kicking character. And I like that. You know, that's sort of the way I like things in general. I don't like, there's so much comedy on the show. It's like Mark Henry's back, and he's, you know, he's not playing around. He's looking to beat the hell out of people. And, you know, I'm all for that. So I thought that was a positive development.
You have to admit that I liked the return of Mark Henry as well, but his reign of destruction paled to that of Brock Lesnar.
Yeah. Are you talking about Raw specifically or in general?
On Raw specifically. Well, actually in general, too. I mean, as far as like, We talked about this before. Brock has a real sense of realism and danger about him, where when you see Brock Lesnar throwing furniture around, I mean, there's that part of you that thinks someone's actually going to get hurt during this segment. This guy is scary. And with Mark Henry, it's like, hey, you know, someone may get hurt, but he's trying to protect everybody. I mean, it's a big pro wrestling monster, whereas Brock is like a big untamed, uncontrollable beast.
I understand the distinction you're making there, but I feel like both of them have something in that regard as far as just sort of being very, you know, very believable monsters. And I thought on Raw, you know, they were pretty comparable. I think in general, Brock has done more sort of things that make you sort of take notice. And I think based on what you said, that you sort of were gravitating towards the way that he threw around the furniture as being a big reason for you thinking that. But as far as him beating up The Miz versus Mark Henry beating up Sin Cara and Rey Mysterio, I thought it was pretty similar. So I think they both are very good in that role. I'm very positive as well on the Elimination Chamber lineup. Like, I feel like, that, I mean, they're just doing what I've sort of advocated for years, which is having the Elimination Chamber be the way to determine the other title shot, and then you have a title match with Rock and Punk, and then you have the, you know, the sort of grudge match involving the Shield. I feel like it's just an optimal use of the guys that they have without undermining anything and setting up WrestleMania well. So I feel like the Elimination Chamber is well built. And I guess one other thing from the show that I didn't like as much was that I feel like so many babyfaces right now are doing way too much pandering to the crowd, like particularly in the ring. Like Ryback, like it feels like he spends the entire match just trying to cheerlead for himself, which, I mean, you can sort of understand why he does it because the crowd goes flat when he isn't trying to get them to chant "Feed Me More." But it just comes across as so desperate, really. I mean, he just sort of desperate for trying to get a reaction out of people. The constant, you know, sort of playing to the crowd, I don't think goes over well. And they've started doing that with well, they haven't started. They've been doing that with Sheamus for a while.
Yeah, actually, let me say something about Ryback real quick. When Ryback is setting up for his meat hook clothesline, and he starts to do the thing with his hand, and the people start chanting "Feed Me More," I'm fine with that one. But when he was in the corner, it was a Cesaro, I think, on Monday. When he took Cesaro to the corner and he starts kicking him to the gut in series of three stomps, like, "Feed me more," and he's kicking like that. I was like, this is the lamest thing I've ever seen a monster do. It was so lame. If you, like, I don't know, part of it is like, if you kick a guy three times and the crowd, like, organically starts to chant "Feed me more," that's fine. But when you are a 285-pound, in the mind of Bruno Sammartino, questionable beast, and you're kicking a guy and chanting your own catchphrase to try... I mean, that to me was just like, this needs to never happen again. Like, he did an interview where he mentioned that he wanted to call himself the Big Hungry, and Vince just shot that down. Like, I never want to hear that phrase again. Like, this was too stupid for Vince McMahon. This three series of kicks in the corner where he chants "Feed Me More" needs to never happen again.
Exactly. Yeah, I agree completely. And I was actually thinking about the Big Hungry thing, too. That stood out to me when I saw that note, too, because it sort of, it just sort of suggested to me that it's a guy without the greatest instincts. And that I thought that thing, I had the same reaction that apparently Vince did. I think most people did to that whole thing. It just was so lame and contrived and corny. And, you know, I think it's sort of a guy that's sort of grasping at straws because he only really has one thing going for him. And, you know, it's, you can only get so far with a three-syllable chant.
How much of Big E Langston did you see in developmental?
Not a lot. Once he came up, I felt like I needed to see a little bit more. So I watched, I'd say three or four promos of him, and I watched, I'd say two or three matches. So that's about it.
Well, in FCW, he was he's a babyface, and he is very gregarious, very charismatic. Everybody loved him, and I think a guy like that, I think Big E Langston could have pulled off like the Big Hungry. But a guy like Ryback is supposed to be like a serious, you know, he is not the type of personality that can pull off the Big Hungry. I don't think it's like necessarily like the worst moniker if you find the right guy to do it. But Ryback is not that guy.
Yeah, I'm not sold on it in general, but I think there's definitely something to be said for finding things that fit one guy and not another guy. And, you know, I mean, certainly, that's, you know, there are lots of gimmicks that have worked very well for one guy, and when they tried to give it to a guy that didn't really fit with, it didn't work, and, you know, vice versa. So just finishing the point from before, though, like, they do that with Ryback. Sheamus does that a lot when he's, you know, trying to get people to chant "Brogue," and now Del Rio starting to do it by trying to get people to chant "C" and sort of giving a very pandering babyface promo, and I feel like that stuff does not help you as a babyface with a lot of people. Like, it may be okay with children, but, like, you know, just when you see a guy just sort of pandering for crowd reaction, I mean, that to me just sort of shuts them off as being a full character. And I think a lot of people react that way to that sort of thing. So I feel like that's something that's becoming way too much of an element with a lot of the top babyfaces right now.
All right. Any other thoughts from Raw?
Nope, that's it.
All right, let's move into Bellator. Actually, first off, did you see the Uriah Hall knockout?
Yes, I did.
My God. That it's on the front page if you haven't seen it, everybody. He does a spinning heel kick, and I guess Uriah Hall afterwards talked about how I thought I killed the guy. He thought he killed this man. And apparently this poor dude was out for like 4 minutes, and apparently was fine. On the way to the hospital, they, you know, he was joking and laughing, so obviously it's never good to be knocked out for 4 minutes, but I mean, he came around and was apparently fine. But Uriah Hall is the guy. He apparently is the guy that when Dana makes the next fight, I presume it's the next fight, whoever his opponent ends up being has a nervous breakdown in the house about having to face Uriah Hall. Todd, we have seen a lot of guys on this show. I remember, I can't remember who it was, but Vince said this man is the next Anderson Silva. Was it Felipe Nover, whatever his name was. This was a while ago. But suffice to say, he was not the next Anderson Silva. And whenever you've got a show like this with guys that are, you know, coming off the independent MMA scene, so to speak, I mean, I cannot tell you how many Ultimate Fighter previews I've read over the last 17 seasons, and people are just raving about a certain, you know, this guy, he's gonna go right in, he's gonna do this, he's gonna do that. And the dude, like, either doesn't make it to the end of the show, or maybe he actually wins and then ends up not doing a lot. When you watch Uriah Hall, or when you watch this Uriah Hall fella, do you feel he's a guy that is actually gonna come in and be a force, or is this another one of those guys that, yeah, you're great when you're facing other geeks on Ultimate Fighter, but UFC is another level entirely?
Well, I mean, if you look at his track record, I mean, he hasn't exactly torn it up on the independent MMA scene. So I don't see a lot of evidence to suggest that he's going to be able to maintain that sort of level on the UFC level. But, I mean, even if he doesn't, I mean, that was a transcendent knockout. I mean, that's something that people are going to talk about, you know, years from now, as far as just sort of, I mean, and I mean, I don't even know if, like, I think of it in sort of a revelry way, because, I mean, it was a scary, scary moment. I mean, after the knockout happened, I heard people comparing it to sort of other knockouts and you know, sort of other spectacular knockouts, like the Terry Adam against Edson Barbosa knockout in Brazil. And, like, there have been knockouts that have been more spectacular in terms of, like, the style. What was so scary about that knockout was the force. You saw that his foot connected with that guy's head with such incredible force that you were expecting the head to explode like a pumpkin. I mean, it was a scary knockout. I mean, it was like one of those big football hits where you get a big helmet-to-helmet collision and the ball comes out and you see the guy's, you know, hands sort of, you know, going up and you know, in sort of a, you know, to show that they've got a concussion and the ball goes flying off in some direction. I mean, it was sort of a thing where it just was unsettling to watch. And I mean, that, you know, you may, even if he doesn't go on to great things from here, I mean, that was, you know, he showed himself to be a very scary dude, just in that moment alone, regardless of what else he does.
All right, I want to talk about Bellator and such, but since we're on the UFC subject, did you hear last night's Observer Radio?
No, I'm way behind on shows.
All right, well, we were talking about Vitor Belfort, who is on testosterone replacement therapy. UFC gave him an exemption for the fight in Brazil. Now, the Nevada State Athletic Commission, obviously, their ruling was that if you have ever failed a test for steroids, you can't get an exemption from us. But this wasn't through Nevada, and so UFC gave him the exemption. I don't think they should have, but that's beside the point. I think, I talked about this with Dave, that there should be a sliding scale when it comes to these exemptions. Let's say that let's say that 800 is the upper limit for a normal person who is 21 years old, okay? I'm just throwing out random numbers to not make this too complicated for the listener and for myself. Let's just say 800 is your top number, okay? For your average 21-year-old, 800. I think that there should be a sliding scale. And as Dave noted, there's no, like, I mean, it's hard to come up with, like, a number. What should be the upper limit when you're 45? Because, you know, different people have different natural upper levels. But I do think that I forget exactly what the age is, but you know, there are I think there are numbers like your the average male testosterone level is going to drop 1% a year after the age of X. I can't even remember what it is. Maybe it's like 25 or whatever. So you should be able to say, all right, so between 25 and 45, that's 20 years. So 1% a year, let's just say, and this is not perfect math because it's a percentages, but let's just say 20%. So to me, if you're 45, then your top level allowed with testosterone replacement therapy should be 20% below what it is for a 21-year-old. My whole point is, Vitor should be allowed to bring himself to the level of a 35-year-old, not a 21-year-old. We're not talking about something that's going to bring you to the level of where you were when you were the 21, 19-year-old phenom. You know what I mean? Like, if you're going to allow it, it should be like, if you're 65 years old, you still shouldn't be able to bring yourself to the level of a 21-year-old. You should bring yourself to the level of a 65-year-old. There should be some sort of sliding scale here that would make this fair.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I'm having trouble wrapping my head around how to do it, honestly, just thinking about what you're talking about right now. In the sense that, like, there is no baseline 20-year-old, there's no baseline 40-year-old. Like, everyone's different. And unless you're measuring what people were at different points, it's difficult to say where that person came from. So if you're giving sort of one person's level of testosterone at the age of 35, may be much higher than what another person's would be. And, you know, you can't really, that would give an advantage to the guy that already has the higher level of testosterone, and it would give a disadvantage to the guy who already has the lower level testosterone through, you know, just sort of through genetic variation and luck. So, I mean, it's difficult to say, but I mean, I think your underlying premise, which is that you ought to be considering, you ought to be trying to put people where they would naturally be as opposed to giving them a leg up than where they would be at that point in their career. I think that's a sound point. I have trouble wrapping my head around the way to properly, moderate that concern.
All right. Let's talk about UFC 156. And how did I do on this thing? I have you been keeping track of our betting? Because I know I did pretty poorly in predictions.
We both. Oh, in predictions, I'm not sure. I wasn't paying attention to predictions. I know our bet, we both lost.
We both lost. Man. Yeah, I went, I think, 1-4. I at least did better than Semper Vivi, who went 0-5. And he's actually been really good this year, so I don't feel too bad. But Antonio Bigfoot Silva knocking out Alistair Overeem. I don't know about you, Todd, but the pay-per-view parties in my house have kind of fallen off over the last year. Just so many shows that, like, it used to be a big deal. Once a month, everybody came over, we watched shows, it was a good time. And then when there was a show like every weekend, you know, it's just like, I think everybody listening to this right now, the parties have fallen off. But for whatever reason, this was a show that all my friends wanted to see, and so I had a big crowd. And when Bigfoot Silva knocked out Alistair Overeem, my God, the reaction in that house. Everybody was so unbelievably happy. I don't know if it was like this around the world. I presume from looking at Twitter that this was a common reaction. But what were your thoughts when Overeem went in there, chin up, hands down, after being a complete dick at the weigh-ins, and then got his head knocked off?
It had to have been the reaction everywhere. Because, I mean, that's just, you know, a basic human story that everyone can relate to. You had this, you know, this big, gigantic, arrogant guy who thought that he was going to run through this other guy and talked himself up and, you know, belittled the other guy. And he, you know, was controlling the fight, and it looked like he was going to go through and win, and then he just got caught. And the guy got his comeuppance. I mean, that's just, you know, I mean, that's a story that could have been written, you know, 15,000 years ago. And, well, not written 15,000 years ago. It could have been told 15,000 years ago with, you know, all the particulars being slightly different. I mean, it would have had the exact same, you know, the exact same import. I mean, it's just, you know, it's a perfect story. What can you say? And I was no different. I thought it was great. And I like Overeem. I find him entertaining. And, you know, he's an entertaining fighter to watch, and he's got an entertaining persona. But, you know, when you see a guy, you know, acting all cocky and you know, taking his opponent for granted, it's satisfying to watch the opponent prove that perhaps he shouldn't have been so cocky and perhaps he shouldn't have taken his opponent for granted. And it was such a spectacular, you know, way, too, with those big shots and, you know, over him essentially out on his feet while Silva was still landing big shots. It was just sort of perfect, everything about it.
I like to watch a lot of shows through the eyes of, like, a casual fan. And sometimes that's reflected in my predictions and reporting. But I like to do that, and I can understand sometimes. Like, it seems like every 2 weeks there has to be, like, a Wrestling Observer Radio thread that goes 25 pages with people arguing about why they're listening to mixed martial arts on Observer Radio. It's like, it just keeps happening for some reason. And sometimes I watch a UFC show, and I watch a certain fight, and it's like, okay, I can understand if you're, like, a pro wrestling fan, why mixed martial arts wouldn't appeal to you. I can understand that. I have no problem with that. But when I see a fight like Bigfoot Silva versus Alistair Overeem, and the story that led up to it, and the action in the fight, and what actually happened, I mean, the whole thing from start to finish, it's like, I just want to tell people, if you would have given this a chance, you would have been just as entertained, if not more, watching this show than you would have watching your average wrestling show. And I'm not even trying to lecture people or anything like that, but I think some people just, I think they close their minds to the fact that sometimes mixed martial arts can be just as entertaining, if not more, than pro wrestling. You can get the same kind of stories, you can get the same kind of action, you can get the same kind of payoffs. And this Bigfoot Silva versus Alistair Overeem, I mean, start to finish, this was like, I hate to say it, this was better than a lot of stuff you'll see in pro wrestling. And that's not even to bury pro wrestling. It's just to say this was really cool. Even if you're a person that doesn't normally like mixed martial arts, you would have liked this whole story and the fight.
Yeah, well, you may not be able to convert everyone to your argument there, but you're not dealing with a difficult crowd for that argument here. You know, I don't need to be sold on the entertainment value of MMA. I'm a big proponent of the entertainment value. What you said was essentially what happened when MMA took off. I mean, you had a bunch of pro wrestling fans that hadn't followed MMA up until that point, and they got into MMA without really knowing that much about it because it was very entertaining and it offered a lot of the same entertainment value that pro wrestling did. I think there's a definite sort of overlap in terms of the in terms of what each provides. Although, I mean, I think there's a lot of overlap with MMA and a lot of other different things. I think there's, you know, there's ways that you can appeal to fans of different things. And, you know, the story of sort of larger-than-life personalities, I think, plays well in just about any sport.
All right, I want to talk about the Bellator thing before we go. Actually, first off, just very quickly, finishing up UFC 156, who did you feel won the main event with Edgar and Aldo?
I had Aldo winning 49-46. I didn't really think.
Really?
I didn't think it was that close of a fight, honestly. I think people were influenced by Joe Rogan's commentary, which was very slanted towards Edgar in the final rounds. Edgar landed slightly more in the third and fifth rounds in particular, but I thought Aldo continued to land the heavier blows. He was connecting with a lot more impact, whereas Edgar was sort of throwing right leg kicks and jabs. And I thought Aldo was just generally getting the better of the action in spite of, you know, Edgar doing better than he did at the beginning. So, I mean, the third through fifth were close enough that certainly I wouldn't consider it some sort of a calamity if Edgar got a decision 48-47 from anyone. But I thought that Aldo was in control of the fight.
All right, this Bellator reality show, I'm baffled. Apparently, they're doing a show called Fight Master. They've got Greg Jackson, Frank Shamrock, Randy Couture, and Joe Warren as coaches, and 32 men. The winner gets $100,000, and they'll be seeded into a Bellator tournament. My big questions are, I got two big questions. A, they're claiming the fighters will choose their coaches. And I still haven't figured out exactly how this is going to happen, because I don't know who in God's name would choose Joe Warren over the other three. But they have since stated that the top seeds, I think they said something like the top seeds will get the first pick or something like that. So maybe, like, I don't know, the top seeds will get first choice. And once a coach has eight, he's out of the running for choice. And then, obviously, like, the bottom eight will end up with Joe Warren, which makes the whole thing even more lopsided. Like, I don't know. But that's at least an interesting hook. And then the other interesting thing is, in Ultimate Fighter, the fights are exhibitions. And thus, the results don't go on a person's official record. The results don't come out. And so the show isn't spoiled. But apparently these fights are not going to be exhibition fights. They're going to be real-life fights that go on a person's record. And so, presumably, with a little bit of investigation, a person could go in and find out all of the results as the show is being taped. So, I don't know if they plan on going live or what their plans are, but I don't know. It's interesting. What are your thoughts on this whole concept? Todd Martin. Are you there? Looks like Todd's not there, everybody. Whoa. Guess he's gone. All right, I got Todd back, I believe. And Todd, before something goes wrong, your thoughts on this Bellator reality show?
Yeah, I don't know what has been in and what has been out as far as our discussion goes. But responding to your point, if indeed it showed up before, I think that they could just have the fights be counted as real fights and then have the results announced later. I don't think that's necessarily problematic. I agree with you on the coaches. It's going to be sort of weird. I think it may end up kind of burying Joe Warren, but I guess we'll see how they do it. I think it's probably going to be something like what you laid out. And to me, I'm just not – what they've said thus far, it doesn't sound that inspired to me. It sounds too much like Ultimate Fighter, too sort of similar in nature. I feel like they should have had – a little bit more to distinguish it, although granted, I'm not sure exactly what that should have been, but it feels very similar. And I feel like the prize at the end also feels kind of lame, like being put into a Bellator tournament. Like, that just feels like a pretty, you know, a pretty weak prize for a show. It's just like, I mean, they have those Bellator tournaments starting all the time. A slot in that doesn't really matter. And in the big picture, and you know, the money, I don't think people really care about that much one way or another. So I'm not really a fan of the concept.
Well, it's adding $100,000.
Yeah, but I don't think people care about the money. That's what I said.
I'd care about the money if I were a poor fighter.
Of course, the fighters can care about the money, sure. But I mean, in terms of like a hook that makes people care in the audience, I don't really care that much. I mean, that's the old Jim Cornette thing about whether you want to have the check be $10,000 or you know, $150,000. And I sort of always saw the two sides to it. Like, I can understand you didn't want to have unrealistic number, but it's also like if you have like just sort of a regular random number, it's like, who cares?
I see. All right, let's get some plugs in. Go to town.
Don't really have anything to plug. You follow me on Twitter at Tom Martin MMA, and have a good rest of honeymoon, Brian.
All right, well, thanks again, Todd, and of course, thanks everybody for listening. We're going to wrap this up. Probably won't be back until probably tomorrow, East Coast time. We got a lot of stuff planned for today, so we're going to go enjoy some volcanoes. Hopefully, ooh, I come back. That's right. So, of course, thanks, Todd. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We shall talk to you again after a while.